You've heard that time is money. Well, consider this an investment on a way to building wealth that's always right on the money. We're sitting down with local experts that all have a mind for money.
Hello and welcome to A Mind for Money with Citizens Bank. My name is Timmy Standifer, and as always, I'm your host. And today with me, I have Jeff, and we are going to be talking about his experience that he has had acting as the agent for his parents through what's called power of attorney. So, Jeff, we appreciate having you on here today.
Thank you.
Yeah, and can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your experience at the bank here?
Will do. My name is Jeff DeVries. I'm a personal banker. I've been working at the East Troy location in the Piggly Wiggly, and I've been there for about 5 years this April. And before that, I was in camping, did a little cash handling, but that's kind of been my experience with banking.
Yeah.
I'm loving it.
Yeah, awesome. And he's a great customer service worker and has a lot of experience helping customers. But today, we're going to be talking a little bit more about on the personal finance side and dealing with some of the stuff that you may deal with at some point in your life. And again, like I said, we're talking about power of attorney. So Jeff, as I mentioned, has had a fairly recent experience acting as the agent via a power of attorney setup or paperwork that's set up typically through a lawyer. But yeah, let's just start before I get too in the weeds talking about what is power of attorney, Jeff?
So a power of attorney is a legally binding document that allows you to appoint someone to manage your property, medical, or financial affairs. Different types of power of attorney exist. I had a durable, and my sister did also, so we both could really make the choice for medical, financial, but we kind of agreed that she would do the financial side, and I'd do the medical side.
Yeah. But so really it was like an all-encompassing power of attorney where you guys were both joint agents.
Yeah.
And then so you kind of just split up the responsibility.
And in reality, as much as we split it, like it was always, we're always talking about the phone over like what we wanted to do. So it made us really close in that. And we kind of made the decisions together, but it was just like, you know, that person would make it final.
Yeah. And in a lot of cases, there's only one agent assigned with maybe a successor agent, but you can do multiple. It's similar to something, you know, obviously very different paperwork, but it's similar to something like a trust where you can assign multiple trustees or have just one with successors and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But what puts a power of attorney into effect? How does, like, if you go and get one drafted, is it effective immediately? Is there a way to like have it set up so it can go into effect if something happens? How does it work?
So usually you put a clause in it for whatever, you know, whatever means. With our parents, it was just kind of like when they hit a point of they can't make the decisions for themselves mentally or physically or not mm-hmm. understanding the point. So that's kind of how it went for us is for them. And thankfully they were, you know, there enough to sign the paperwork before, you know, it became like, well, they can't really sign this over and we need to take that over. So we don't really have to deal with that mess of it, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And that's called what's called a springing power of attorney. That springing action puts the power of attorney into effect because you can have power of attorney set up that's just like effective right away.
Yeah.
But like Jeff said, it's important to have it, if you can, have it established where you're still at a point mentally and cognitively where you know what you're doing and what you're signing off on. But it is pretty common to have that springing clause where once you as the person setting up the power of attorney are no longer mentally capable to make the decisions you need to, then that power of attorney gets put into effect and then the agents can start acting on your behalf. And I know you mentioned durable power of attorney. Do you want to talk a little bit about what a durable power of attorney means and what maybe like a durable versus non-durable is? I know most people do durable power of attorney because it just makes more sense, but
yeah. So for the durable part, it means you can make the decisions for both. For me and my sister, we thought it was just wise to have that in case, because she lives like 3 hours away from me, like mm-hmm. I live 2.5 from my parents. Mm-hmm. So it was just kind of like, hey, if this person can't get a hold of, like, let's just make it safe so both of us have that decision and that time crunch.
Yeah, and durable really shows. I mean, the big thing that durable does too is it stays in effect even when someone becomes incapacitated too.
Yep.
So like, if you're having a springing, I mean, we're not lawyers, obviously, but it, you know, if you're having a springing, it makes sense to have the durable power of attorney because like, if you have the power of attorney set up where it's not going to take effect until something happens, if it's not a durable power of attorney, what that means is once you're not once you're incapacitated, the power of attorney goes away. So, the durable power of attorney gives someone gives the agent continued power to keep making decisions, even if you're incapacitated or if you're not really at the place to do that. So now that we've kind of set the stage a little bit for what power of attorney is, can you tell us a bit about your experience and what it was like, the things you had to decide, the actions you had to take, what responsibilities ended up falling to you and still do fall to you to this day?
Yeah, because I still am the power attorney for my dad.
Yeah.
So about 4 or 5 years ago, we started to realize that my dad, who was taking care of my mom, because my mom's kind of had health issues my entire life. And so physically certain things, she wasn't able to do because she had a stroke when I was in about 8th grade. And so life changed for everybody in the family that, you got to do a little more, I started packing my lunches, doing laundry, taking on more responsibility in that sense. And so, when me and my sister moved away from college and kind of starting our own lives, that more came on my dad, that became a little too much for him. And then I came home one day and I just noticed like, he seemed a little off was the starting point of his dementia. And we just realized, like they got a big house, a yard, they can't really take care of it. We need, and it's becoming stressful for family to take care of them. Cause I'm very thankful that my 3 aunts helped out with that, but it was just getting too much. So then we needed to move them into assisted living. And so how all that worked with the power of attorney is, I was super thankful that my aunts had their own attorney already. So he kind of got the paperwork together. They emailed it to me. I read over it, signed it, had it notarized, sent it back. And, it was bing, bang, boom. It's very, very easy. But I would say that process is a lot more complicated if I didn't have, 3 other people helping us out.
Yeah, and you didn't already have the connections to a lawyer to work with, because you do need a lawyer. It's a legal contract, so you do need someone who is legally capable of drafting that paperwork and having it signed off on and everything. So the power of attorney paperwork, that was set up prior to you doing anything for finding them a new living situation?
Yeah, that was set up prior, and then we had to have a really tough conversation of like, hey, we need you to understand that you are no longer able to stay in this house and take care of it and take care of yourselves. Like, we need to move you. And we really thought that would be tough for my dad, just because that's just the kind of guy he is. But he was very humble in that, very thankful, and then just made the process really, really, I would say, made it easy and even easier, even though finding assisted living, moving them out, getting rid, deciding what stays, what goes, that was a really hard process. And I mean, that was, that took weeks to months. I mean, we went and viewed 3 assisted living locations. I probably took at least a week, not consecutively, but in time of just cleaning out their house and taking out stuff and going through my own memorabilia and just being like, man, I forgot I had this stuff, and that's just kind of what we did with that. And then we moved them into assisted living, and that was good for them for a while. But then we wanted to keep them together as long as we could. But then the bummer is my dad's dementia made his level of care a lot more than what my mom's was. And for 2-3 years, we had them separated, which was a bummer. And then, just last June, my mom passed. So, but that was rough. So that's how that kind of played out.
So when they moved out, what then happened as far, did you guys sell the home?
We sold the home. There was a time where I thought about like moving back, taking it over. And some few friends, like even had some guys, we were just going to kind of try to flip it ourselves. And the crazy thing in that is when we were cleaning it out one weekend, a guy across the street had purchased the house via the Cook County, because it had gone in foreclosure, saw that we were cleaning it out, was like, hey, are you guys wanting to sell? I flip houses. We kind of talked to him about our situation, and he was able to give us a pretty good deal on the market. And then that all happened right before COVID, which was just nuts in itself.
So was there like a lot of work that needed to be done on that? House,
so my dad had just, a few things had just gotten really bad.
Upkeep was getting hard for him.
I think the last time I was there, I just ripped an entire carpet out just because it was bad.
And it just needed to be done so something could be put there instead.
And there was like a shed with the well, and the floor was just, it was plywood, but it was just like, it was like, it looked like this. And man, I was just like, oh, it's just nuts. But
so for like the sale and everything, since you guys were power of attorney, did you or your sister, were you guys the one who like actually went to the closing and did all of that?
So thankfully, again, we went to my aunt's attorney to kind of cover that cost, and we did it with, you know, with the guy personally. He gave us mostly cash because he had a cash on hand, because it was pretty much his business was just, you know, taking the cash. Yeah, he was just a flipper. His dad would, you know, his dad would renovate the houses and then they would just sell it. So that was just, that was pretty easy. That was the easy part. And we put it in their bank accounts and still, you know, kind of had that run that way. So
yeah, and then you were able to use those to help that those funds to help pay for the
living. The assisted living and all that other other stuff, and pay off my dad's debt and other life insurance stuff. So
what does it look like when, you know, something maybe happens at the living home, and you know, you or your sister are the points of contact, correct?
Yeah.
So when anything happens, you're the...
So usually you get a phone call. Usually it's in the middle of the day. If it's bad, it's at the middle of the night. So sometimes I've had 6 a.m. phone calls, and, you know, then you just stay up because, you know, it's just, it's not fun, you know? but, you know, they call you and they say, you know, either this is, they just, you know, hey, they need this, they need more level of care or less level of care, or like, your dad's been really doing this, can you please talk to him? You know, stuff like that, very simple. But I would also say, you know, our parents could still text us over the phone. So it was just kind of like, that was the other part. If it was something my sister could do, I could call her, because she lived, at that time, she lived, you know, 10, 15 minutes away. So it was just kind of like, if she could tackle it for the day, then she would. But there were a few times where like only I could take care of it. And I think there was one time I had to get my mom a new phone because her phone broke. And I pretty much drove 8 hours, four there, four back, just to go buy a phone, switch it out, and then drive back. And you know, you got to do what you got to do for your parents. So, but you know, this stuff that if that's basically how that stuff would play out.
Yeah, because yeah, in some sort of action like that, if they aren't able to go do it themselves, you're the only one legally capable of signing them up for a contract, because a phone is a contract.
Yeah.
So you know, stuff like that you don't, you know, may not think about that. Why it is good to have a power of attorney, because if you're at the place where you know you need those types of things to live, I mean, in modern day, it's pretty hard to live without a cell phone. I mean, you can, but it's not the most convenient. Well, and especially if you're communicating with family and stuff. Well,
And I have a message, but my parents are both deaf, so like that was their main form of communication to us, is through texting, you know, tell us what's going on.
Yeah.
So the fact that she didn't have her phone was just, it was just tough.
Yeah. For your situation, especially like you mentioned. Yeah. And I'm sure that, you know, with your parents both being deaf, that added a different dynamic than maybe other people have experienced. And, and obviously everyone has their own health complications, but, I know you've mentioned you've had some unique experiences. Thankfully you are pretty well learned on the type of, care and the type of intermediaries that are required, or interpreters required for different situations. Because, you know, even though your parents have been good at reading lips and stuff throughout their life, I'm sure like they're, you know, when things are serious, there are serious things that need to be involved. When do you feel like you need to step into like really, make sure that those specific needs are taken care of? Like in this situation with your parents being deaf, like have there been times where you've really felt like you needed to be like, no, you guys need to offer this to my mom or dad because they need that legally.
So there was a moment about a year and a half ago where my mom was just kind of in and out of the hospital she was literally at the hospital for, I want to say, 3 to 6 months. And every time she got moved, we had to retrain the nurses, retrain the floor, because they had all these things capable, but they just didn't understand that. No, like my mom is just being nice and shaking her. Yes, but she doesn't understand you. Mm-hmm. So you need, they have these little awesome like carts that have interpreters that they call up, and that's kind of how they would talk to my mom, which is a really cool invention. But like we had to stay on them and remind them, and like and you know, I get it, man. It is stressful in that industry, and especially with COVID, it's just been a rough time. So like, I'm not trying to be a jerk or mean, but like, it's just, it's very hard, especially when your parents, you know, they don't speak, that, you know, they speak English, but it's, you know, their sign language, and there's sometimes you're just treated like a second class citizen, and it's it's tough, man.
Well, and like you said, I'm sure there was a lot of times where your mom was just being nice, just being like, I don't want to, you know, be a bother. But at the same time, there is a certain level of care that I guess then falls to you as the agent to make sure is being met. and taken care of. And that's another responsibility that is important if you are the agent for someone who is in somewhere for extended care or end of life living. Unfortunately, that's a place a lot of elder abuse happens too.
Oh, yeah.
Unfortunately, there a lot of elder financial abuse happens from people who are set up as like agent or in a power of attorney too. But if you are, hopefully a good and diligent agent for the person that you are acting power of attorney for, you should be making sure those things are good and checking in. You know, you can't just kind of leave someone in a in a home and forget them because they aren't always fully capable of letting people know what they need or if things aren't going correctly, because there's a reason they're in that type of home or care. So it's just, it is a lot of responsibility, but they are counting on you for a reason. You know, they've picked you for a reason. So,
And I'm thankful that like a lot of times with my sister, you know, she was doing things, I trusted her and I trusted her to do financially, but she would always call me before like, hey, I'm paying for this just so you know. And that was the other nice thing is like not me and her both can look at my parents' financial records. So it's as much as we're checking on each other, not that we have to, but like we kind of set up our own little, you know, system of checks and balances in the sense that there's always somebody else that's seeing what's going on. But again, you know, with the power of attorney, it's usually one person and, you know, that can go unconceded, and that's where
things kind of fall through the cracks.
That's where it gets dangerous for people, and it's just you know.
Well, and so would you say that that's one of the like the tips you would give to someone who is setting up a power of attorney is to consider having joint agents?
Definitely.
Just for the sake of like alleviating stress and but also like you said, those checks and balances of, you know, someone's going to be a lot less tempted to steal money from you if there's someone else with the same level of power that is checking in on that. I mean, and even if they are a good person, it's something that unfortunately happens a lot. And we've seen this as personal bankers through the years, is someone is the agent for their parents who's getting older and maybe nearing the end of their life. And in their mind, they might justify it like, oh, well, this money will probably be mine eventually anyways. So what's the harm if I start taking some of it? And that's, first of all, illegal. You're really technically stealing from your parents. And second of all, I mean, there's stuff you don't even if you're not doing it with ill intent, even if your thought is just like this, you know, this for all intents and purposes, the money will be mine. That's not always the case. And you don't even know. You don't know if your parents have a will or have an estate set up that money's supposed to go somewhere else. That, you know, the money that you're acting as agent for, you are just acting on behalf of the person, in this case, your parents, or for a lot of people's case, their parents that they're set up as acting agents for. And the same thing if, you know, it's a different type of thing, but it can be similar if you're the trustee on a trust. You know, the money, the same thing happens with parents setting up accounts for their children, you know, and their kids get checks, and really that money theoretically should be used for the benefit of the child. That's a different situation, obviously, because you're the parent taking care of a child, and the child can't legally hold financial money.
You're not wrong, but that kind of stuff happens all the time, and people don't understand when they set up those type of accounts. They don't understand that part, and I have that conversation, you know, 5-7 times a week, and just helping people understand that, because when they do get old enough to take care of it, it's like, no, you need to change this account because it's not, you know, it's not set up that way.
And I guess, do you have any other closing thoughts on anything like experiences that you've had or stories you think are worth sharing for someone who's considering a power of attorney or might be an agent someday, or even like on the banking side, the stuff that you've seen as a personal banker for people with power of attorney?
The best bet, just make sure you trust that person. I personally haven't come across anything, but I'm just very thankful that me and my sister can trust each other, and that, you know, neither one of us want to harm our parents. We want the best for them, you know, even at this point in their life. And just, you know, just find, you know, get the trustworthy people doing the right things. And if they're not, you know, don't trust them. You know, it's kind of like a trust thing. You either do or don't, you know, there's no like, you know, it's hard to earn.
Yeah. And that's the nice thing. And the thing that can kind of come back to bite you is it's contingent on the person that you've built a relationship with, and, you know, the hoping for the good naturedness of people. But in most situations, hopefully it works out well. It sounds like in your situation, it did. And you and your sister are trustworthy people trying to take care of your parents to the best of their abilities. But, with that, Jeff, we thank you so much for coming and sharing obviously very personal story to you, but hopefully people can connect with it and find something that, you know, they can think about when they're considering setting up a power of attorney or having a having something like that set up for them or their parents or something like that. Right. And I mean, you would probably say, even though it was a lot of stress and everything, it was a good thing they had that power of attorney, right?
Definitely. It definitely made some things a lot easier. Mm-hmm. And it was a weird road. And, you know, there's a lot of ways and people you can reach out to and talk to. I think the one common thing I saw is when I would talk to people, they'd be like, oh, yeah, I just did that for my parents. And granted, they would be like, you know, they'd be 10 to 20 years older than me. But, you know, it's nice to at least talk those things out and just know that, hey, you know, you're not the only one, you know. There's people you can reach out to for that.
And getting that set up ahead of time is
it's crucial.
The way to do it.
Always before, you know, don't react, you know.
Yeah. And we talk about that basically every episode is almost everything in the personal finance world is making sure you have it ready for when you're going to need it. Because if it's not ready when you need it, then you're playing catch up and everything's bad.
Yeah, man. Understand.
It's a lot harder.
It's not, don't play if, play when.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Don't play if, play when. With that, we thank you so much for watching and listening. And we thank you again, Jeff, for coming in and talking with us today. If you have any questions or suggestions for any future topics, this is kind of a format we're going to be going a little more into is getting some stories from people who have experienced different areas of personal finance and getting more of their firsthand experience, you know, things that they've learned or maybe they didn't expect. So if you have ideas of maybe type of topics we could dip into and find some people who have had that experience, we'd really appreciate it. You can email me directly at heytimmy@amindformoney.com. That's HEYTIMMY@amindformoney.com. And we thank you so much. And we hope to see you next time.